This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
This is Dan Ball on WEEI.
What are some of the attributes and things that you've noticed when you watch Drake May?
Yeah, I mean, he's a heck of a player. It's no secret. I've been very fortunate to, you know, block for some pretty dang good quarterbacks in my time at college with Jaden Daniels and Garrett Nussmeier, and now my first one in the NFL is Drake May. So I've been very, you know, fortunate. I'm super excited, you know, not only build our relationship on the field, but, you know, off the field. And I'm just looking forward to it. He's a heck of a player. And not only me, you know, just the rest of the O-line, we just got to put them in the best position possible to, you know, help us win games.
That right there is the Southern twang of the Patriots' number 4 overall draft selection in 2025. Will Campbell, as Will joined WEEI Afternoons on Friday, just hours after being selected in the first round of the 2025 NFL Draft. And it is the draft where we begin here on this Sunday morning. Good morning and welcome to WEEI. Dan Ball with you. Just a little after 10 o'clock, 10:04 here on Sunday, April the 27th, 2025. Thanks so much for joining us here on 93.7 WEEI and across the WEEI Sports Radio Network. If you're joining us in the Cape, Providence, Rhode Island, Springfield, Massachusetts, that's my home station, 105.5. You got Worcester, Portland, Keene, New Hampshire, Claremont, New Hampshire, and White River Junction, Vermont. Wherever you are, thanks for joining us. And you can join the conversation at any point at 617-779-7937. If you're not listening on the radio, that probably means you're listening on the free Odyssey app. You can download that, A-U-D-A-C-Y. You can also download podcasts, get things on demand from our other shows, all that kind of stuff with the free Odyssey app. Alongside me is my good friend Zach Coe, who's behind the glass. Good morning, Zach. How are you?
Doing good, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing very well. You've had the morning shift here, started with the great KJ Carson into me. So KJ sets the bar high. I bring it down a little bit for the next couple hours. Leading into Red Sox baseball, decisive game number 3 between the Sox and the Guardians after a doubleheader split out in Cleveland yesterday. We'll get to the Red Sox. They are on the docket for a little bit later on. We also have the Celtics getting ready for game 4 after they kind of got punched in the mouth in game 3 against the Orlando Magic. You had both of the stars and Tatum and Brown, and didn't really seem to matter all that much. So we'll get into that. Something I've also been biting my tongue on during the course of this week, because of course it's heavy draft talk, and I understand that. Quite honestly, the draft for quite a while, the draft has meant more to Patriots fans than the actual regular season in 2024 did. So I understand that dominated the conversation, and that's where we're going to start. I've been biting my tongue on this Bruins end of season press conference and the calamity that thing was between Don Sweeney, Cam Neely, Charlie Jacobs. The tone that was set after a year where the Bruins accepted, all right, we're gonna rebuild, we're gonna try to build this thing up from scratch, we're gonna focus on the draft and free agency, and we're gonna trade off our assets. Just the tone that was set and the lack of, or the competency that seemed to lack in the way that they responded in a near hour long press conference that I thought was going to result with Cam Neely jumping over the table at one of the reporters in the press corps. But we'll get to that a little bit later on. But I want to start with the NFL draft. And Zach, I need to ask you a question. So I was listening on my way in, listening this morning, getting ready for this show. What was KJ's opening take about Will Campbell?
He wants one of the veterans to get in a fight with him on the first day of training camp.
Why?
To toughen him up.
To toughen up Will Campbell. Who, this is the same Will Campbell, just to make sure I have this right, the same Will Campbell that when he was doing his deadlifts with LSU, winked at the camera and then deadlifted whatever it was, 600 pounds or whatever the number was that he put up. A guy that a guy who was asked the question on Friday, what kind of fears do you have? And he said, I don't really have any fears. Not that he was going to say, like, I'm afraid of spiders on the radio or something like that. But I would tend to differ just a little bit from my good friend KJ. So the first overall pick the fourth overall pick for the Patriots on Thursday, Will Campbell. He's been discussed ad nauseum. The draft is now concluded. Days one, day two, day three, you're done. The Patriots in seven rounds, 11 players taken in total. First four picks were all on offense. Five offensive players taken, then four players on defense and two special teamers as Mike Vrabel channeled Bill Belichick and went special teams on day three of the draft. Will Campbell, number one, four overall. Then your day two picks, which raised my eyebrows in a good way. Day number two, you get Travion Henderson, running back out of Ohio State, then Kyle Williams, the wide receiver out of Washington State. And then you wrap up that day, 95th overall, Jared Wilson, the center, out of Georgia. And a lot of moves made between day two and day three to stockpile picks for this year and next. That's all part of the conversation. What I want to know from you is, how do you grade the Patriots draft? We now have three full days done. An event that has been discussed and overanalyzed and broken down, and Shime's done mock drafts, and John Lyons has done mock drafts, and Mel Kiper has defended Shedeur Sanders, and I'm sure the check is in the mail from the Sanders family for that guy after the 3 days. And it's been broken down six ways to Sunday, but now that it's done, I want to know what you think. What was your favorite pick? Were there any picks that you did not like? That's what we're going to start with here at 617-779-7937. Let's start right at the top with Will Campbell. And I want to borrow a phrase from Phil Perry to describe how I think the Patriots approached that pick. It's not necessarily the best player available at that spot. So Cam Ward, presumptive number one overall pick, goes number one. Then you have the trade. Jacksonville moves up, takes Travis Hunter. Okay, fine. There were rumors. Brian Baldinger had a premonition on Wednesday or Thursday. He shot a selfie video, put it on Twitter. He said, there's going to be a blockbuster trade in the top five. And he ended up being right about that. It's just crazy how people completely dream those things out of nowhere and have no information from experts anywhere. Brian Baldinger just happened to, you know, pull that out. He woke up from a dead sleep and he shot up, and instead of screaming something like related to his life, he said, top five pick. And that was how he woke up, and there wasn't any information behind it. So move is made, Travis Hunter taken. Jacksonville did not have a pre-draft meeting with Travis Hunter, so they know nothing about the person. They've seen nothing behind the scenes, or they've just basically read the same press clippings that all of us have and said, that's our guy. So if you have your qualms about the Mike Vrabel, Elliott Wolf regime here in New England, you could be Jacksonville, and you also could be Cleveland, and we will get to that.
There was that report that they had this deal in place since like April 17th, too. So if they had the framework of a deal to move up for Travis Hunter in place, you would think that they would like bring him in for an interview or two.
You would. But Zach, as you know, that would make too much sense. If you've been watching a sport of your choice for your entire life, and me saying this at 26 doesn't hold as much weight, but if you've been watching for 20-25 years and you feel like you know the sport inside out, left and right, up and down, you know everything there is to know, you're going to forget more than other fans know. Don't forget, you're not too far away from being an NFL executive. The only thing you're missing is either a graduate degree or a couple years in the league. That's all you're really missing. Like, these guys are supposed to be the geniuses in the room. That's not always the case. But again, if you don't like the New England, at least you're not Jacksonville, but I digress. So they take Travis Hunter regardless of how much homework they did or did not do. Then Abdul Carter goes third overall. All of the rumors about the Giants are going to take Shedeur. They're going to take Jackson Dart. They're going to take Jalen Milroe. They're going to use that pick for a quarterback, which was really the story in the months leading up to the draft, but in the weeks leading up to the draft, it really changed. So chalk, 1, 2, 3, and 4, that leaves the Patriots with the best player available to them. And that's what Phil Perry said. And I really like the way that he put it. It's not necessarily the best available player. It's the best available player to them. What's the good? You're talking about playing left tackle in front of two very good quarterbacks facing very good SEC competition. That's the good. The bad, the arm length. The other measurables, including just the sheer size of the individual, all relatively positive, arm length notwithstanding. The tape, you can go back and forth. I'm not going to sit here and preach and tell you that I watched all the tape on Will Campbell, and I can tell whether or not he's going to be elite at the next level. It varies. In 1 year you have Joe Alt, who's taken at the top of the draft class, and he's elite. And at the other end, you have a guy like Evan Neal from Alabama. Everybody, oh, look at Perf, look at the kind of competition he's facing. Look at what he's going to. He's basically playing in the JV version of the NFL, and then he's going to be a great pro for the Giants. Well, that's not the case. So again, it varies. Here's my main takeaway. This was before the draft, and this is since the draft has taken place. We're now starting to learn more about the intangibles of Will Campbell. Every time I've heard Campbell open his mouth, and am I a little biased for having been, you know, a sidecar to the interview that happened on Friday, hearing his first radio appearance on our afternoon show on Friday? Yes. But before that, we're talking about his pre-draft interviews. We're talking about his draft interview on the stage with Jamie Erdahl, where he said he would fight and die for Drake May. And in the days before that, before knowing who his starting quarterback was going to be, him saying, I'm a quarterback guy. Essentially the same narrative, where I will fight and I will do what it takes to protect my quarterback. Everything that I've heard him say comes off as confident but not cocky, comes off as extremely calm, and comes off as the kind of guy that will contribute to the culture that has been preached to us since Mike Vrabel was named the next head coach of the New England Patriots. I think from a culture perspective, from an accountability perspective, these intangibles that are supposed to be the pillars of this era of Patriots football, I think it's a home run pick. Would you have wanted a player that's a bit flashier? Ashton Jeanty, maybe Tyler Warren. I know a lot of people are extremely high on Warren. I would have been curious to see what Drake May would have made of a target like that. I am still fascinated to see what Ashton Jeanty is at the professional level. He was dominant beyond compare at the collegiate level. Does he succeed in this offense behind this offensive line? I don't know. It's hard to say. Is it really worth the high ceiling, low floor kind of pick that a running back, a wide receiver, or maybe in this case a tight end, loosely, kind of merits? The Patriots, in my opinion, were not in a position to take one of those accessory type players, a guy that complements your odd. You needed to continue what you've been doing this offseason, which is building in the trenches, in my opinion. I think an offensive lineman, regardless of if in the long term, if he ends up being a tackle or a guard, regardless of that, the biggest complaint consistently last year and in years past has been the play and the personnel on the offensive line. So why are we now complaining after the Patriots take allegedly, from what a lot of experts have said, best player available at that position? Why is that the complaint? I don't get it. Yes, there's a little more flash with Ashton Jeanty. Yes, maybe there's a little more flash if you wanted to trade down. I still wouldn't have minded them trading down, but Mike Vrabel said it in his post first round presser that there was no trade interest from other teams in trading down. So they took Will Campbell, and that's okay. I think the floor of this pick is really what intrigues me. It's a safe pick. It's a responsible pick. It's not a flashy pick, but it's a pick. Excuse me. It's a pick that your offense has needed and wanted, and that fans have clamored for. So maybe it's not the most nuanced way of looking at it. It's not overly flashy, but that's what then takes me to day two. And you can join the conversation on this at 617-779-7937. I'm all for a Will Campbell debate and discussion. That's fine. It's not going to be unilaterally beloved. No draft pick really ever is. But I think for what you need and what you accomplished, and then what you did on day two, I think the Will Campbell pick got better as each subsequent pick in day two of the draft came for the Patriots. Travion Henderson, running back out of Ohio State. Love that pick. Getting Will Campbell at 4 and then Travion Henderson at 38, I think that's a good order of operations. You did the safe pick, your pillar on the offensive line, good character guy, guy you've clearly done a lot of homework on, guy who's willing to fight and die for your quarterback, shored up your offensive line, which will now be better in front of the running back that you then took at number 38, and Travion Henderson. He goes at 38, then Kyle Williams, who was a darling after meeting with the Patriots out of Washington State, 69th overall. Nice. You then get two weapons for your quarterback and on your offense in those subsequent picks after addressing what is the most pressing need on your roster. After signing Stephon Diggs, your biggest need then became your offensive line. You added everywhere on defense and free agency. That's great. You added Stephon Diggs. That's also great. Your biggest need was still left tackle and offensive line. You did that. Then, once you check that box, the need to fill box, so to speak. Not the most eloquent way to put it, but I think my point gets across. You needed to address that. Then, in subsequent rounds, you could get to your wants, your wish list items, your ornaments on the tree. And that's where Henderson comes in. That's where Kyle Williams comes in. And a sneaky move to move back in that third round and still get the guy that was regarded, at least from ESPN, as the best center on the board in Jared Wilson. So it gives you some insurance behind Garrett Bradbury, who's currently slotted in as your first team center. He's not going to be your center for the long term. There are some holes that you can poke in his game. He's kind of played all around the offensive line, but he can slide to guard if he needs to, if Wilson progresses. And if he doesn't, then you have a center, A, just as a backup in 2025, but you have a foundation. You're building something. You have young developmental depth at multiple spots on your offensive line. Center is hard to develop. And now you have a guy who you can at least, who comes from a very good program, who you can continue to work with. Then the pendulum swings back the other way on day 3. Defense, defense, defense. Craig Woodson, safety out of California. Then you got Josh Palmer, defensive tackle, Florida State. And Braden Swinson, the edge rusher out of LSU, which for a lot of people was the pick of the draft for the Patriots. Given the pedigree, given where he was ranked on a lot of experts' boards, you got him fifth round, 146 overall. You get the kicker out of Miami, sixth round, and then 3 7th round picks, Marcus Bryant, Julian Ashby, Kobe Miner, offensive tackle, long snapper, big need, and then Kobe Miner, Mr. Irrelevant, corner out of Memphis.
That long snapper has absolute wheels.
Really?
He had a faster 10-yard split in the 40 than Roma Dunze did.
Really? I did not see that. Oh, I'm in on that. I saw that, and that surprised the hell out of me. But it was the first. Also, it was the first snapper taken since 2021. Maybe was the number. Regardless, so the draft has come to a close. 7 rounds done. 11 players selected. They've also started to add the undrafted free agents. Couple guys that jumped out. Efton Chisholm III. What a name, by the way. Out of Eastern Washington, described by some as a big-time sleeper, the best receiver in the FCS. He set the FCS record for most consecutive games with a reception with 53. This past year, 1,311 yards, 13 touchdowns, averaged 10 receptions a game over 12 games for Eastern Washington. So that's a high-volume target. That's a Josh McDaniels dream. That is a McDaniels guy. He impressed a lot of people before the draft. Ended up going undrafted. Patriots get him. That's a good ad. Also, they did add another young quarterback out of Louisiana, Ben Wooldridge. 29 games between Fresno State and Louisiana. 60.9% completion percentage. 4,769 yards, 38 touchdowns, and 12 picks. Rushed 134 times for 461 yards and 9 touchdowns. My question, Zach, is did they get Drake May's blessing when they signed this quarterback?
More importantly, did they get Drake May's family's blessing?
That's right. See, there you go. That it, and just so you know, If they didn't, Ben Wooldridge, he's on his way out of town. The Dallas Cowboys are already calling. No. That's a whole nother interesting narrative that came from this offseason. It did make me laugh that they did not take a quarterback in this draft and waited to sign an undrafted free agent. I thought that was whatever conspiracy you want to spin out of it is fine. I thought it was funny out of the whole Drake May didn't like Joe Milton narrative that then you turn around and you pick zero quarterbacks in the draft out of the 11 picks that you had. Maybe you didn't see a fit. I would have rather you taken nobody than Shedeur Sanders, but we will get into that next. Some grades from around the various publications that cover the draft. PFF, Pro Football Focus, Patriots get an A. New York Post, say what you will about them, but they give the Patriots an A. Sports Illustrated, A-. Grades on each individual day from NFL.com. B-plus overall, B-minus on day one, A-plus day two. That was your run on offense that you had there. And then day three gets a B. I think they were just a little more curious about the special teams picks than anything else. But, you know, you got to – Vrabel's a Belichick guy. You got to go special teams on day three. And then Warren Sharp's draft capital over expectation. It's a metric to say basically based on where these players were ranked, where they were supposed to go on the board, where did teams get them? So a team like Cleveland, who took a guy like Shedeur Sanders, where he went in the fifth round, he was ranked by a number of experts anywhere, top 10, top 20. So the metric kind of skews for a team like the Browns that gets a guy who fell really far on the draft. So they were further up. Patriots were 15 on Warren Sharp's metric for basically how much value did the Patriots get out of their draft picks. And I think that's a fair number, but I don't think it's a number that really truly encapsulates what New England did in their draft this year. It's not like they got these crazy steals. They got guys a couple spots lower than they were supposed to go. That happened in a couple different spots. But I think the way to encapsulate what the Patriots did, they saw a need, they had a need, they drafted the best player to suit that need at that spot at that time. They had a need on offensive line, they drafted an offensive lineman. Then they identified needs on the offense. They drafted three straight players to address certain needs on their offense. Running back depth, wide receiver depth, offensive line depth. Bang, 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 boom, you're good. Then you go back to defense. Defense, a lot of first-teamers and a lot of veterans brought in during free agency, so let's add some youth. Let's add a developmental element to this defense so that you have guys that in future years hopefully can progress and be first-teamers and, if nothing else, can fill in when guys get hurt, because that's going to happen. Then a little bit of depth, figure out your special teams. You needed a kicker, you got a kicker, okay. I think it's just, it can be as simple as getting the best player for the need that was most pressing in that round. Offensive line was no longer the most pressing, or left tackle was no longer the most pressing need after the first round. So you get weapons. Then you had weapons. All right, let's go back to the offensive line. Center, we're a little bit weak there. Let's add that. Okay, let's go back to defense. I just really liked the flow of how the Patriots went about the 2025 NFL draft and how they went about addressing different needs. And we'll get into this a little bit later on in the hour, but to fully encapsulate what Mike Vrabel and Elliott Wolf did this offseason between free agency and the draft, when you look at their depth chart and the different areas, I use a website called Our Lads, and they mark off different additions with different colors, like your draft picks are orange and your free agent signings are purple. And so you can really get a good visualization of, wow, how much has this team changed year over year? They painted with all colors this offseason. So we'll get into that. Other takeaways from the draft. Shedeur Sanders didn't go first overall, didn't go second overall, didn't go third overall. Day one, day two, gone. He was still there. He headlined some of the other main takeaways from the 2025 NFL draft, plus your calls and text at 617-779-7937. Your takeaways from the Patriots draft class. What did you like? What didn't you like? We'll get to all of that after Zach Coe catch you caught up on what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Red Sox split yesterday's doubleheader in Cleveland, dropping the first game 5-4, winning the second 7-3. But the story of the day was Jaron Duran's straight steal of home. He became the first Red Sox base runner to have a straight steal of home since Jacoby Ellsbury did so on the exact same day in 2009. They'll wrap up that three-game set this afternoon when Brian Baio takes the mound for his second start of the 2025 campaign opposite Logan Allen for Cleveland. You can hear coverage of that one right here on WEEI and across the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Coverage starts at 12:40 with Dan Ball on the MassMutual pregame show. Then Will Fleming and Cooper Boardman with the call of the game. First pitch at 1:40. 2025 NFL Draft wrapped up yesterday with the Patriots making five selections in rounds 5-7. They took edge rusher Braden Swinson, kicker Andres Borgalis, tackle Marcus Bryant, long snapper Julian Ashby, and Mr. Irrelevant, corner Kobe Miner. Celtics looking to bounce back from Friday's Game 3 loss and take a stranglehold on their first-round series with the Magic tonight. They're listing Jaylen Brown as questionable, still continuing to nurse that knee injury, while they've already ruled Drew Holiday out with a right hamstring strain. Game 4 tip-off from the Kia Center set for 7. Elsewhere in the NBA playoffs, Cleveland took a 3-0 lead over the Miami Heat. The Thunder swept their first-round series with the Grizzlies. An Aaron Gordon buzzer-beater dunk evened up the series between the Nuggets and Clippers, and the Warriors took a 2-1 series lead over the Rockets. Meanwhile, over in the NHL, the Lightning beat the Panthers 5-1 to cut the Panthers' series lead in half. They now lead 2-1. Golden Knights with an overtime winner in Minnesota to even up their series with the Wild 2-2. Ottawa avoiding the sweep with an overtime winner over Toronto, and Colorado tied up their series with the Dallas Stars at two games apiece with a 4-0 win at home. My name is Zach Cohen. That's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Dan Ball coming up after this.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
And I think that this is the NFL starting to take a stand with all the changes that we are seeing in the climate of college football. These kids, they have a lot of power, and especially a kid like Shadur, whose father happens to be Deion Primetime Sanders. Kids hold all of the control and all the power when it comes to college football. Whenever that starts to transcend and work its way and leak and creep into the NFL, that's when the owners are going to put their foot down. That's when the league is going to put its foot down and say, enough is enough. And I think this is the perfect example of it. And unfortunately, it does have to be Shadur.
Damian Harris, CBS Sports, on the conundrum to some. That was Shadur Sanders falling and falling and falling. Falling and not being able to get up. That should have been his NIL deal. Shadur Sanders brought to you by Life Alert. That would have been good. 617-779-7937. That's how you call. That's how you text. Catching up on some of the texts from today so far. Hey, Dan, receiver Kyle Williams is their best pick. They finally broke the wide receiver rookie curse. He will be very good. Henderson was a bit of a reach in the second round. He's a very good separator. This is about Williams. The very good separator reiterated that they broke the wide receiver rookie curse. Let's take a bit of a breath. We need to get a rookie year under his belt before we say they broke the curse. 508, interesting point here. What irritated me the most is I think the Bills drafted a tackle towards the end, and the guy was like 6'8", but he had the same arm length as Will Campbell. Not sure if that's possible, if not a little shorter, and they were saying how good this guy is, and there's a chance he's a top-notch tackle, and they think he was a steal at where they got him, and never even mentioned that guy's arm length on TV. Yes, that's a very interesting point. We'll get to that in just a moment. Lon Larrison, amazing running back, kid out of UC Davis, poking around over the last two seasons. The 6'215" this was an undrafted free agent signing, by the way. 6'215" workhorse of a back managed to break 1,000 rushing yards while rising fairly close to 1,000 receiving yards as well. As a fifth-year back in the Big Sky Conference last season, Larrison recorded 1,465 rushing yards and 17 touchdowns on 284 carries. That's 5.2 yards per carry. On top of a significant 62 receptions for 847 yards and 6 additional scores. He also attempted 9 passes, completing 5 for 45 yards and a touchdown. Jeez. All right.
And he rides bulls.
He what?
He rides bulls in a rodeo, in like rodeos.
He does?
Yeah,
there's like real, like not mechanical ones.
Yeah,
real
like real, yeah, real life bulls and rodeos.
Wow! I just when I thought I couldn't like him more. He is, again, 6 foot tall, 250 pounds, UC Davis, Caldwell, Idaho. That makes sense. I feel like that's one of your few pastimes that you have if you're an Idaho kid, 6 foot tall football player. Kudos for that. Seems like a couple of those, the weapons that have come from the UDFA class, have really been highlights for Josh McDaniels' group. I think not hearing this from the 203, I think not hearing the phrase, quote, a reach for anyone about the Pats draft was refreshing and a good sign. The only time that I really heard reach was just talking about Will Campbell, but it was just about his arms. And it was when Adam Jones tweeted his arms weren't even long enough to wipe the tears away from his eyes when he was crying talking to Jamie Erdahl. But other than that, I haven't heard the term reach thrown around very much. Last one from the 617. So the rumors of May being afraid of Milton are true. No, they're not. I'm just saying that there isn't fire, but there's smoke around this whole thing. And I am not, N-O-T, not relitigating the Joe Milton thing again. I just think it's funny how, after a couple weeks worth of mind-numbing conversation about how Drake May didn't like Joe Milton and how Drake May's family was offended that they drafted a second quarterback after their son was drafted third overall, I just thought it was funny they didn't pick a quarterback. That's all. I'm not extrapolating anything from it. I'm not saying that Drake May told them not to take. That's not what I'm saying. I just think it's funny how, after all of that. By the way, Zach, my favorite take that came from that conversation, and it was one of the callers on the afternoon show, was that Mayo was fired and Milton was traded because both of them won that final game against Buffalo and cost them the first overall pick. That was one of my personal favorites that came from that. It's conspiratorial. Like, you really got to pull out your tinfoil hat and maybe double up the layer of the tinfoil to believe that one. But it was fun. I kind of liked it. I don't know, whatever. 617-779-7937. Steve is in Fall River to kick us off on Will Campbell. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad you provided a little more context to my opening comment. Let me first say I've heard enough talk from Will Campbell to last his career. I don't really want to hear another. I don't want to hear any more from him.
I agree.
I'd like to see him playing football and blocking people and not getting beat.
Yep.
But here's, you gave me context to my initial quick thought. This is Steve from Fall River, the only guy that said Bill Belichick wasn't going to get a job in the NFL, because, you know, we spent 6 months talking about where he was going.
Yep.
So let me weigh in now and make a note of it. You're the first guy to hear this.
Okay.
On your show. This pick was lazy and stupid. Let me tell you why. You already said that GMs are one rung below a layperson like us. You already said they needed a tackle. Hey, look, a tackle's at 4. Let's take him. I could have done that. You could have done that.
Right. Okay.
That's why it's lazy. That's why it's lazy. Why is it stupid? Because if he can play, and it's an if he can play is only half the equation between Matt White and Wynn, we'll grade how bad this is. It can't be only be bad. So the issue of him not playing, what else could they have done with this fourth pick?
Sure.
What else could they have done to build this team in a greater way? Because protecting this quarterback, he's one of five guys doing it. You're not getting automatically filling that void. So that's the nature of his pick. Now, which means he's not as consequential as a number one wide receiver, a guy like Travis Hunter, a guy like Abdul Carter. So they didn't take an impactful position with that fourth pick. They overpaid for it. This guy, Warren Sharp or whatever he was with this expected over whatever,
yeah.
Useless stat.
Okay.
So here's the deal. You've already said it takes time to figure it out. How are we going to determine how bad this is? Because in a couple of years, we're going to see who they could have had, how the picks from 4 to 32 were, and how they could have probably gotten someone better and more impactful from 4 to 32.
All right, Steve, thanks for the call. I've had enough of that. I understand the complaint. That's the other end of the spectrum from where I came in talking about Will Campbell, and everybody's entitled to their own opinion, and somebody texted in Stevie Curran, which I thought was very funny. Well, we can continue this on the other side, and I know I've talked nothing about Shadur by playing that quote from Damian Harris. So we'll get to all that. I do know we have to take a break. Listen, every single draft pick that has ever been made in the history of sport, we have to wait a year, if not more, to see how they pan out. So I'm just getting that out of the way now. Yes, we're going to have to wait to see how Will Campbell pans out. I'm aware of that. He was drafted. It's April. They don't kick off until September. I get that. So I'm not rushing to say that this was the right. It could be the wrong pick. He could suck. That's the same way. So could Cam Ward. So could Travis Hunter. And so could Abdul Carter. And so could Ashton Jeanty. And so could Tyler Warren. Every single player has the ability to suck out of this year's draft. So I'm not sitting here and anointing Will Campbell the best draft pick that the Patriots could have had. There wasn't an obvious number one wide receiver in this class. It's not like last year where you had three guys right at the top of the draft board that you could point to and go, unequivocally, those guys are number one receivers. Ted McMillan, maybe he's that guy. Kyle Williams, maybe he's that guy. Jalen Noel, maybe he's that guy. Travis Hunter, maybe he's the best wide receiver that's ever walked planet Earth. We don't know that answer. There wasn't an obvious pick that beyond a shadow of a doubt you could go to and say that's a better weapon for Drake May. And that helps the 2025 New England Patriots, given their needs on that day, more than Will Campbell was.
Campbell wasn't my pick at the at
who's
four.
Your pick? Who's
I would have taken Ted McMillan.
You would have.
Yeah, I think he's the best receiver in the draft. I think he gives a lot of length to Drake May and gives him a surefire weapon. I also was a proponent of trading back into the first round for one of Josh Connerly or Josh Simmons
to
fill that tackle void. But I think Stephen Fall River is the first person ever to say that left tackle is not an impactful position on
a football crazy.
Field.
It's crazy, and thank you. And for anybody that wanted Tet or wanted Ashton Jeanty or wanted Tyler Warren, wanted a weapon, and would have advocated for what you said, trade into the back half. Kansas City got Josh Simmons at 32. There is a halfway decent chance that he, as he recovers from his injury, ends up being a better player. And if we have the conversation that Josh Simmons at 32 was a better player than Will Campbell at 4 in a couple years, then all right. You got it wrong. But to look at this roster and not say left tackle wasn't the biggest hole where you don't have an answer. At least wide receiver, you have Stephon Diggs that you've added into this mix. If you went in without him and your wide receiver room was Mac Hollins on top of what you had last year, sure, take a wide receiver. And if you're advocating like you did for Tet and you have a higher evaluation than I do of him, you think he is a number one wide receiver in this league and he's going to be more impactful than a left tackle, that's fine. And that's the beauty of the draft. These things are subjective. The way the teams feel, the way the experts feel, the way the fans feel are completely different things. And that's fine. But to your point, to sit here and unequivocally say that it was a lazy pick and a stupid pick for the thing that's been griped about most on this roster, I would argue, than anything else over the last 5 years, offensive line play, protection for your quarterback, so that your most valuable asset, which is Drake May, is not on his ass all the time next year. I think that's short-sighted. I really do. And maybe you got the wrong one. Maybe you got the wrong one. We don't know that yet. So wherever you land on this conversation, you're justified in feeling that way. They took the best player available to them, in my personal opinion. Okay, diatribe over. Let me remove myself from my soapbox. We'll continue the draft conversation after this on EEI.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
Okay, Zach, you take the wheel and that's what we come back with.
You said bangers only.
I did say bangers only. Fair enough, and that's a subjective term. 617-779-7937. I got to give credit where credit is due. Steve from Fall River always gets the text line jumping. I won't read most of them because, no reason to bog ourselves down in that. How about some good ones from the 413? I'm excited about Henderson. Not only is he a good running back, if you saw some of the tape, he can level blitzers and protect the quarterback too. I did see that. Very good in pass protection, which is huge. Again, all in the name of protecting and giving Drake May more time to work. And also, not for nothing, allowing him to be more of a mobile quarterback, because if you're committed to this idea that he's a Josh Allen prototype. He plays with that same kind of physicality and aggression, and he can create plays in a number of different ways, then you got to make sure that you beef up the protection around him in any way possible. So point well taken there from the 413-603 for your own mental health block, Steve from Fall River, and be a happier human. Duly noted. We'll pass that along to the decision makers. From the 860, why would they draft another quarterback? They got one. Just go get a better version of Dobbs to be quarterback too. Well, I mean, that's kind of the point of the draft, is to get somebody who's better for your quarterback too. You can sign somebody all you want, but if you have to have an option behind Drake May for that exact same reason. And I just mentioned that you want him to be more physical. You want him to be more aggressive. You want him to be a dual threat, yada, yada, yada. Not everybody's built like a linebacker like Josh Allen is. There is a reasonable chance that if you allow him to play at his full capacity, which is being more than just a pocket passer, which is what the best quarterbacks in the league are, they are guys that can do more than just scramble, that you can have design runs for, that can create with their legs. And, you know, if you have a quarterback that's in that vein, you have to have a backup option that allows you to compete. Again, Joe Milton did this for one game against the second stringers for the Buffalo Bills. It might as well have been the University of Buffalo out there with some of the guys that he was playing. He did it well, but there's no reason to outwardly state that he would have been the guy that could jump right in for May if he got hurt or if he wasn't playing well and could have quarterbacked you at the same level. I can tell you one thing, though. Josh Dobbs is not going to be that guy either. I'd rather take the chance with what Joe Milton was going to be or going to not be than what we know the Pastrnak is, which is just not that good. So if you recognize in that text that you needed to add a QB2 that's better than Dobbs, why not take a quarterback that you think could be there? There were plenty of day two quarterbacks that went off the board. So,
well, even look what they did with Joe Milton last year. He was mostly a healthy scratch as the third quarterback.
Right, 100%.
Jacoby Brissett. They could have just done that exact same thing with a new quarterback.
Right, but they didn't, and that's fine. And again, I will say this for the umpteenth time. I'm not implying anything. I'm not asserting anything. I just think it's interesting. And that's all. And sometimes things can just be interesting, and we just have to go with that. 203, Pat's got the best ranking-wise left tackle, center, kicker, long snapper, and a top-three ranked running back. Pretty solid. I would tend to agree. Now, we do have to move on here because we are up against a break. Shedeur Sanders, I'm going to put this very succinctly, and I hope that this sums it up well enough. I'm going to take one pass at this, and we'll see how it goes. Shedeur is an extremely talented athlete. I don't think that there's any denying that his arm strength, his physical attributes, his ability to run and create, and everything that you look for in a modern day 2025 NFL quarterback, he has those attributes. Hasn't been done at the SEC level, hasn't been done against top tier talent his entire career. No, it was barely done over his collegiate career. So you have to take into account the competition that he's facing when you're trying to evaluate, is this guy a starting quarterback? If 32 teams in the NFL, or one team out of 32 in the NFL, looked at him, looked at the competition he was playing, and said, I don't care, he could have done this against Alabama, against Georgia, against any team in the country, he could have been this elite, they would have taken him earlier in the draft. The only reason that we start to talk about the extracurricular stuff with Shedeur Sanders is because teams are not positive that he's a starter in the NFL. He can be a backup. He's a guy that you want to have on your roster. But is he unequivocally a starter in the NFL? 32 teams said no. And so when you talk about a guy who's a backup, there are certain characteristics that you have to have as a backup that are different from being a starter. You have to be a team guy. You have to be willing to be the guy who's sitting on the sidelines. You have to be the guy who's willing to sit in street clothes on the sidelines. And I'm not saying that Shedeur Sanders isn't willing to do that. But what happens if, so say for the Cleveland Browns, who have one of the most bizarre quarterback rooms I have ever seen in my entire life. What are we doing? Again, if you don't like Mike Vrabel and Elliott Wolf, you're more than justified in feeling that way. But look at the Browns right now. Are you kidding me? So anyways, that's its own point. So we get into a situation, hey, maybe Shadur is scratched. Maybe he is the Joe Milton guy. He's not your emergency QB. He's not your backup. He doesn't win the competition in camp. He's scratched. He's a practice squad guy. Well, this is going to be a story on First Take. This is going to be a story on whatever FS1's counter to that is. You probably can assume that Deion Sanders is going to start to say something about this. There's going to be more chatter and more attention and more negativity that comes from external sources about Shadur Sanders than a lot of teams would want to sign up for. Why am I going to bring in a guy that brings in this whole extra wave of just conversation, attention? I'm not saying it's negative. It's just it is attention, and it's conversation, and it's eyeballs on something that isn't going to ultimately impact you winning football games. So am I going to sign up for the wave of extracurriculars that comes along with a player and draft him when I'm not even sure he's going to be on my roster, let alone be my starter? I think 31 other teams in football said no. I'm not willing to do that. I can find this value elsewhere, whether it's another quarterback on the draft, as you saw with Tyler Shuck and Dylan Gabriel and Jalen Milroe, all these guys that were day two, if not day three, talents going before Shadur. I think a lot of teams said, I would rather roll the dice that this player is less than in terms of the talent, because at least I know I don't have to worry about whatever comes next. And I think it's a nod to the PR, and it's a nod to the attention and all of the other things that comes, good, bad, or otherwise. If Shadur's your starter and he does well, then look at all this great positive attention. But I just don't think there were teams in this league that identified him as the starter to where it was worth what you're getting in terms of the extracurriculars and external factors that come along with Shadur Sanders. And I hope that's where we can leave the conversation for the long term, because I am sick and tired of listening to Mel Kiper and Adam Schefter and everybody else go on the air and hold the bag for the Sanders family. Sick of it. I'm tired of it. Let the guy be a professional.
You mean
he is
you
now.
Don't want to hear the guy who said he would retire if Jimmy Clausen wasn't a successful NFL quarterback say
no.
That the league doesn't know how to evaluate quarterbacks?
No, I don't. I really don't. Yeah, the whole, oh my God, Zach, and I'm way late, so we got to take a break, but the holier than thou takes that came on a team that, and you should be making those picks. Okay, let's move on. A lot more to get to. Bruins had their end of season press conference. Celtics, we're going to talk to Justin Turpin of our own WEEI. We got some Pure Hoops weekend edition coming up too, and the Sox, game 3 against the Guardians, all that in hour number 2 here on WEEI.